This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. It is August. You've made it this far. Thanks for being with us. Later in this episode, we'll hear about how doctors are keeping track of how other illnesses are spreading around the world during the pandemic. And we'll also discuss a new app that's redefining the way we think of the waiting room experience when we go to the doctor. But first, our news update. The COVID-19 pandemic has done a lot to disturb the flow of day-to-day life. It has also generated a lot of trash. Many grocery stores switched back to single-use plastic bags and prohibited customers from bringing their own reusable bags. Restaurants are encouraged to use disposable menus and utensils. And then, of course, healthcare workers are using tons of PPE, or personal protective equipment. In early March, the World Health Organization estimated that 89 million medical masks were needed every month globally for the COVID-19 response, along with 76 million exam gloves and 1.6 million goggles. But some experts now say consumers can safely resume using reusable products, like bags and coffee mugs. That's because more information is known now about the virus and how it's transmitted, and using less plastic will help the environment. A new report of COVID-19 patients referred to a neurological hospital in the United Kingdom described complications including delirium, brain inflammation, and stroke. Some viral infections can impact the brain, even if the virus does not directly infect brain tissue. These infections usually cause mild or flu-like symptoms, but when they affect the brain, the issues can be severe. The FDA's new list of dangerous hand sanitizers has now grown to more than 100. With more on which to avoid is Radio MD's Bill Klaproth.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has expanded its warning about hand sanitizers to avoid, with the list now topping 100. First, the FDA warned consumers about hand sanitizers containing methanol, which can be toxic when absorbed through the skin and potentially deadly if ingested. Now the FDA is also warning about hand sanitizers containing insufficient levels of alcohol. The CDC recommends that people use alcohol-based hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Nearly all of the hand sanitizers on the FDA's list were manufactured in Mexico. The agency has recommended recalls for most of the products and has also issued import alerts to halt them from entering the country. You can find the list at fda.gov. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Coronavirus is making us all socially awkward. An article from Vox says that's called insinuation anxiety, or fear of suggesting that other people are untrustworthy, making every drinks day or meetup in the park feel fraught. The author writes that the direct correlation to a coronavirus situation would be walking down the street with your mask, you know, around your neck, and then lifting it over your nose and face when another person walks by. On one hand, it could show that you're being respectful, but it also might come across as an insinuation of the other person's hygiene and safety. Neither option, keeping the mask down or lifting it up, feels good for the decision maker, leading to many an awkward situation. As states see a spike in COVID positive cases, Dr. Richard Webby, a member of the Infectious Diseases Department at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and the World Health Organization's vaccine composition team, are watching other viruses spread around the world. I caught up with him the other day to hear about those other illnesses and how they may relate to COVID-19. So you're tracking the flu and some other viruses around the world during this pandemic. Let's start with the Southern Hemisphere. I know it's their winter right now, meaning it's their original flu season. How is all that going down there?
From the point of view of influenza, it's going swimmingly. So there really is very, very limited influenza activity going on in a number of places. So, you know, it really does seem that the interventions that have been put in place to limit the SARS-2 spread has also worked very well for influenza. Yeah, so for example, countries like Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, which, you know, would typically be experiencing influenza outbreaks right now, you know, are essentially seeing baseline activity.
And I'm sure we've all heard the unsettling news that there's like a possible new pandemic, a swine flu happening in other parts of the world. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so where that's coming from is an article that's just been published. The viruses that they discuss in it are not really new per se. So they've been around for a little while. and very closely related viruses probably for, you know, a decade or so. So we kind of knew these viruses were around. I think, you know, this paper certainly just highlights the fact that, you know, there are these potentially pandemic flu viruses and other viruses, of course, but circulating in animal populations. So, you know, this group of viruses described in the paper, or their characteristics that are really described in the paper, you know, are all characteristics we think these zoonotic and potentially pandemic viruses must have. But, you know, I don't think at this stage we could say this is an emerging event. It's just a, you know, heads up, here's a group of viruses that we should really keep our eyes on.
Now, we're still pretty, you know, in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. How does looking at these other viruses happening or potentially happening help us with what's going on with COVID-19?
Well, I think in terms of help us where we are now, it's probably not very useful. But, you know, I think in the whole, we've got to put it in the context of pandemic preparedness. You know, so I think everything we do to enhance pandemic preparedness for flu, you know, potentially does help us for some of these, you know, for a coronavirus outbreak, for example. You know, so it does things like, it, you know, develops capacity to monitor these various populations in parts of the world, you know, develops laboratory infrastructure, you know, develops response infrastructure, it develops sort of trained people around the world. And, you know, so a lot of those things, even though, say, we're targeting influenza, you know, some of the flow-on effects are helpful regardless of what agent we're talking about. You know, and again, for even, so let's say we want to make stockpiles of PPE against the pandemic flu, you know, that PPE is just as valuable if it's a coronavirus or if it's a, you know, retrovirus, sort of name your favorite virus.
Now, it's like 90 degrees where I am right now, but I know we're looking into fall and there's always the hope that this thing is ending soon. But what do you see heading into fall of this year when it becomes, you know, flu season in the States?
I think it's a really big question. And you know, we don't have a good, well, of course, we don't have an answer for it because it's not here yet, but I don't think we have a really good way to really predict. You know, as I said, we're certainly looking closely at the Southern Hemisphere. I mean, as I talked about, the countries that have successfully, or at least for now, successfully controlled the COVID, you know, have successfully controlled flu. You know, of course, there are other countries in the Southern Hemisphere that haven't done such a good job, and you know, we're hearing a little bit that there's some flu circulating, but not even a lot of flu in those areas where they haven't controlled COVID. You know, so it's still a question, you know, can both of these viruses circulate at the same time to large extents? You know, it's possible that they can't. But again, I think that what we've got to do is prepare for the fact that they could both be there. And so, you know, there are people, including the US CDC, developing tests to, you know, essentially take the same sample and test it for influenza and COVID, you know, essentially with the same test. Because I think it's one of the impacts that the COVID outbreak has had. And this is a little bit different than looking at these potentially pandemic viruses, but one of the consequences of the COVID is also that there has been, at least for a period of time, a bit of a, I would say, lapse in just normal flu surveillance in people. You know, a lot of places that are, you know, doing this type of surveillance, you know, don't necessarily have the resources to be testing for everything. So, you know, right now, of course, their resources are all targeted towards COVID and are slowly starting to come back up for flu. So, you know, there is a little bit of gap in knowledge. But again, what we hope is, you know, as we move forward into Northern Hemisphere fall, that, you know, people will put flu back on their radar and will start looking for it. You know, I think one of the big, still unanswered questions is, you know, what would happen to someone who happens to be infected with both viruses at the same time? You know, is that person likely to have, you know, worse disease, less disease, or sort of no impact at all? And, you know, I think it's those are the types of questions that would like some answers to heading into what, again, could be both viruses circulating, but it could also be that only one of them's there.
So kind of too early to really make any definitive claims or,
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, the data from the Southern Hemisphere is either there's nothing there or it's just not enough information to know, what's happening where, in those countries that haven't been as successful at controlling the COVID outbreak. It's just the type of granular data is not quite there for us to help us sort of predict what we might be seeing.
In the wake of COVID-19, healthcare providers are being forced to rethink the traditional waiting room experience. Doc Clocker, a Tampa-based medical wait time reporting software, was founded, funded, and is entirely run by practicing physicians who know exactly what medical providers and patients need as we battle the current COVID surge. Founder and cardiologist Kevin McCarty joins us to tell us about the app. So let's talk about this app. Why is it so important for patients to be able to check in for appointments remotely right now?
So this is an experience that started about 5 years ago, and our original intent was to create transparency in the waiting room. So we've all had the experience of waiting for a doctor and the frustration we have sometimes if the doctor's delayed, and that 5 minute delay turns into 30 and then 50 minutes and not knowing when the doctor's going to arrive. So we originally created the software to provide wait time delays. Now with COVID, the remote check-in process just gives patients assurance that they don't have to sit in a waiting room with potentially other sick patients and risk the chance of getting infected. So it's really apropos in a time like this where we have to have safety measures and adhere to social distancing.
Now, when I heard about this app, right at the top, it's run exclusively by physicians. Why is that something that's so important to you guys?
Well, we care about our patients. We have a public service and an obligation to maintain a safe environment. And as it turns out, the medical office is not the safest place to be. We've got either patients that potentially can convey infection or patients that have comorbid conditions that have the potential of not faring well if they get infected. So we have a duty to ensure that the medical office is a safe house. And the way to do that is with technology, by leveraging technology.
So logistically, tell us just a bit about how the app works.
Yeah, so we wanted to make this very easy. We didn't want to design something that was yet another encumbrance on the physician's practice. We as practicing physicians, we already have enough to do with paperwork and administrative work. So how this works is patients download a smartphone app and the doctor's office has a web portal. And so when the patient is in the vicinity of the office, they open the smartphone app, they check in, and then the front office staff get a chime to let them know that the patients have checked in. And when the office is ready for the patient to come in, they press on a click of a button, they get a text message sent to the patient, and then the patient receives that and comes in. And that's as easy as the transaction has to be.
Of course, this is so important with social distancing and COVID-19, but how do you think this will remain? Will this be the new norm when we, get on the other side of the pandemic?
The COVID-19 has been a terrible thing. That's an understatement. But one of the sort of silver linings in the experience of COVID is that it's really accelerated technology as it relates to healthcare systems. So healthcare has always been, in the rears when it comes to technological advancements for whatever reason. You look at other industries like pizza. There's a smartphone app that you can order pizza. You know exactly when it's going to be delivered. Your UPS package. It doesn't matter. Any other industry, we've got complete transparency of the process. When it comes to healthcare, it just comes to a grinding halt. And so the one thing that's changed with COVID that I believe is going to persist even with the resolution of COVID, if that happens, is that it really pushes us to leverage technology at its fullest extent. And I think this is just another great example where we're pushing providers and healthcare systems and healthcare technology to create that transparency that patients are spoiled with other industries using.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, is there anything else you want to tell listeners about your app?
I think the biggest challenge that we have is spreading awareness. So we've created campaigns to help our colleagues, you know, join and sign up on the app, but it helps to have the patients also alert their physicians to the availability of this technology. And we've made it very easy to onboard. We've actually, in the spirit of just helping our fellow physicians, we've actually created a coupon code so you can try it and use it for free during COVID. So it's really, it's a system that we've designed to help our colleagues and help the patients kind of bear the burden of trying to manage their health in a time like this. So I would hope that to your audience that to help spread awareness of the availability of this.
This has been RadioMD COVID-19 Weekly. Contact us with questions or just give us a shout at COVID-19 at RadioMD.com. I'm Caitlin White. Stay safe and 6 feet apart.